And welcome into the Wednesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Oh, with a $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keezer, Ian Safar, all in the building hanging out. Rexroad, welcome back to the great state of Tennessee. What's going on?
Thank you. I will say that more than once when I was in San Antonio, I corrected people who called Texas UT. I said,
thank you.
Oh, actually, UT is Tennessee. So I got into a somewhat, you know, kind of like friendly argument with an Uber driver at one point about that. But
which, yeah, you know, existed before Texas was a state.
Exactly. So like Texas isn't a state without the Volunteers making sure that that Texas is a state.
So have some of that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be UT. I'm sorry, Texas. So anyway, it was good. And also, I hope if anybody follows me on X, you saw the 11,000-calorie lunch I had yesterday on my way out of town. Good God. I mean, I was in serious pain last night, but my God, that beef rib, holy cow. Pinkertons in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Stood in a line for an hour, but worth it.
I will say, you know, there's great food really all across this country. You know, different places you can go, you can find great food. You know, a lot of people will bring up New Orleans, which certainly is worthy of those discussions.
Yes.
But I have to think that, just personally for me, the best area in the country for food is Texas. I love, like, just the amount of things that you can find in Texas and the amount of things that are just, like, you look at the plate, it's like, how could one human being even approach coming close to eating this? Texas, I think, has the most per capita.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. Yeah, I'm a big New Orleans guy when it comes to that, you know, because I just love all that stuff. But, yeah, between the barbecue and, in particular, Texas is, you know, the brisket is, you know, that's where it's the best,
yeah.
You know, or at least, I mean, it's the best I've had. And then also, like, the Mexican food, Tex-Mex, all that stuff, that's a pretty strong combo, man.
Your thoughts on the Florida Gators win the national championship game? Max Herz we were talking in the Preds locker room yesterday, and some differing thoughts around the room on the game and what happened. But Max Herz told me, this was his thought, it was the least exciting, great game that he's ever watched. That's what he said.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, I mean, all three games were, like, really good. And, you know, I think the Duke-Houston game will be the one that really is remembered. You know, a couple of things. One is, and I've said this before, but I fell in love with sports really because of the 1983 NCAA tournament. And, yes, I'm dating myself. But that really is, like, when I became, like, a rabid sports fan and when, you know, when college basketball became my favorite sport. And that tournament ended with just the heartbreaker of heartbreakers for one of the best teams to ever play in the tournament, with two of the best basketball players of all time on that team, and they lost to NC State on an air ball dunked at the buzzer. And Jimmy Valvano's running around. I watched that live. My parents let me stay up. It was this incredible moment. And I'm watching the other night, and you know, the way this game ends with, you know, with the closeout, and you, I mean, just, like, just grab the ball. If you grab the ball – yes, it's a travel, but then there's, like, three, you know, at least, like, you can foul them. You might, they miss one, you have a chance, and that ball is just bouncing.
Yep.
And it's like, how could one program have the kind of, I mean, they already had the most Final Fours without winning a championship, and now let me think about that. You know, that finish and the NC State finish are on their, you know, in their history. I felt bad for their fans, because their fans in that stadium, and we're talking probably 40,000 of them, just, like, looks of just, like, disbelief. They were totally in control of that game the whole time. But Florida did that the whole tournament.
Yeah.
They should have lost to UConn. They should have lost to Texas Tech. I was sure they were losing to Auburn, and I was really sure they were losing to Houston. And they're sitting here as national champs, so you got to tip your cap.
Do you think had Houston won the national championship that they would have allowed Hakeem Olajuwon on the floor? Because they did not.
After the Duke game.
It's like, you will not go out there, you random person.
Oh, God.
It's like, buddy, that's Hakeem Olajuwon.
I know, man. You know, security people take a lot of crap, and they have to, like, follow the credential thing. But, like, someone's got to be able to step in there and say, like, this is the greatest player who's ever played for this program. Please.
The video is pretty funny.
Yeah.
He's just sitting there like, disbelief. What?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a toughie.
Just good stuff.
And then and then 2 days later, that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough stretch for old Hakeem there.
So it would have been the oldest coach of all time to win one in Kelvin Sampson. And I mean, I feel bad for Kelvin Sampson, man. And it ends up being one of the youngest coaches to win one. Todd Golden, of course, his whole thing, you know, also just incredibly just a weird deal, which I wrote a little bit about The Athletic, but just, you know, all the stuff that happened with him this year. And the Title IX investigation, which did clear him, but, you know, it's just a very – just a, it, the whole thing was very weird around him this whole time, you know. And I think, frankly, that there'd be a lot more talk about, is this the next great coach in the sport, if not for that crap.
Yep.
But that's how it goes.
That is how it goes. So the Nashville Predators win last night 7-6 in overtime, so – an oddly, extremely entertaining game for the Predators last night. They had been through a stretch where I think heading into last night, they had scored one goal or less. So either one goal or have been shut out in 9 of their previous 13, which is a difficult one to accomplish there.
They were saving it up for last night.
Putting up 7 on the board last night. They win. They're down 6-4. They come back, score 2 at the end of regulation, and then win in overtime on Fedor Svechkov. So the season coming to an end next week. They got 2 on the road this weekend and then 2 at home to close things out next weekend. And then you enter into one of the most important off seasons in team history from the standpoint of what exactly are they going to be next year. Now, you just came off one of the most, we thought, impactful off seasons in team history with making the big splash in free agency. We know how it's gone for the Predators since then, but a huge off season coming up. And we're going to dissect that a little bit. We'll take thoughts from Preds fans, 615-737-1025. It was interesting. So Barry Trotz was on with Stilly yesterday. And Stilly asked him basically, you know, if you end up winning the draft lottery and you've got the number one overall pick, do you know today who you're taking? And I thought Trotz's answer to that was pretty interesting. Here's what Barry Trotz had to say yesterday on Stillman & Company.
Who's the best player?
I can't tell you. You just have to read
your... Have you made up your mind, though? Like, now, if the Nashville Predators were on the clock with the first pick, do you know who you would draft?
I would.
So I bet you have it somewhere where you're, like, thinking of the lines next season, and that's why I kind of asked you about Kimmel. Like, do you see Kimmel up here? But when you're putting it together for next year, like, I know Forsberg's on the list for next year. I know Michael Bunting, for instance, is on the list for next year, as you see him on the team, and it... Do you have a spot open in the center of that ice for somebody that might be Misa, might be Hagans, might be one of these guys that if the ping pong balls fall your way, you may get that you look at and you say, you know what? Screw Milwaukee. He's ready for Nashville. We're going to put him out there as a kid and go from there. Do you have that on your docket?
I do have that an open mind on that docket, yes. There's a couple players I think that could transition and play in the National Hockey League this year.
So that was Trotz yesterday on the show. So it says he knows. Like, if they get the number one overall pick, he knows who he would take, which is interesting from this standpoint because we've talked about a couple of center options that they've got in Misa and Hagans, and that's who I think they should take because – they've been searching for one of those guys for 25 years.
But you know what they're good at.
But I also know what they're good at, and I also know what the consensus best player in the draft is, and it ain't one of the centermen. It's a defenseman. So I do wonder, like, when he says, oh, yeah, I know who I'd pick, would it be the consensus best player in the draft, which is Matthew Schaefer, a defenseman, or has he already decided on one of those two centerman that he'd have to take?
I mean, you have to finally try to do that, don't you?
I think so, too.
I think you have to. Maybe the best case for them is to get the third pick.
The best case scenario for them might be, hey, get San Jose to win the lottery, and then you get up at number 2, and you can pick between one of those two centermen. But get San Jose, take that defenseman,
right.
You just pick somebody else.
You will not have the option of taking the defenseman. There you go. But you have your choice, the other two guys, yeah. So we were talking before the show, so they're – worst case scenario is likely going to end up being the fifth pick, right?
Well, right now they are almost – they're all but guaranteed to be in 30th in the league is where they're going to finish. I mean, you're looking at the standings. They're not catching at this point Chicago, who's below them at 54 points. They're at 64. So they got a 10-point lead on 31. If you look up to 29 in Philadelphia – Philadelphia's got 71 points. The Predators are at 64, and Philadelphia's got a game in hand. So Philadelphia's 7 up on the Predators with a game in hand. So basically, if they lose another game or Philadelphia wins another game, they're locked into 30. So when in this lottery, they can only move back. Let's say they lose the lottery, and they either a team from behind them jumps way up. They can only move back 2 spots. So the worst they'd pick is 5th. Now, 5th would not be a bad pick for them, but it would not be what you're looking for in this year's draft.
Yeah. I mean, really, the nightmare is probably that they get the 4th pick, right? So you get
even 4th, you could probably deal with, because there is another prospect there, albeit a winger, who's a really good one. But, yes, you want a top 3.
Yeah. So that's a big, big day. That's a big, big day in franchise history, the lottery.
Yeah, I mean, that's June. I believe June 27th is that day. So we're gonna have to wait a while.
I mean, you know that Chicago.
That's not actually. That's not the day. That's the day of the draft. So I don't know when the lottery is. I'm trying to find the lottery date. But whenever that lottery date is, I mean, that is. We talk about the off season. There's more than just the draft that specifically for next year's team they're gonna have to figure out this off season. But in terms of the franchise as a whole, I mean. That lottery day is pretty darn important as to what this team could look like, not only moving into next year, but really if you hit. I mean, this could be a you know, 10, 12, 15-year franchise-altering kind of thing for you if you hit that on the right guy.
Yeah. Now, I guess they don't actually – they actually haven't determined an exact time, but it's supposed to be sometime in early May. I mean, they always do it around –
yeah.
Like right before a playoff game, I think.
I mean, I would
right?
love to know right now. Just give me something to look forward to on that front. But, yeah.
Yeah, they should – well, they should set a date. I mean, the season's about to end.
The draft's June 27th.
All the crappy teams want to know.
It's
got to
be before then.
Yeah, the crappy teams need something to look forward to.
615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. This is a massive offseason that is now right around the corner for the Predators. And the question, I think, is pretty simple in the short term. Are they going to be able to be competitive next year? Or is this a team and a franchise right now that is a long way off from returning to the playoffs? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Predators with a massive offseason coming up. End of the regular season is next week. Throwing it out there. Can this team fix things in one offseason and get back to being competitive, or are they a long ways away from this point to returning to any sort of contention for playoffs or beyond? Taking your thoughts on that, 615-737-1025. Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Bob in Antioch. Bob, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. I think that they're 2 or 3 years away. I don't think that they can fix things in one offseason. I have a question for you. If when it comes time for them to pick in the draft, if the two centermen are gone and that top-rated defenseman is still there, do you think that they ought to take him? I would not have a problem even if they took the defenseman over one of the center prospects, because they have a lot of holes on defense. And maybe that's been overshadowed by the lack of production by the free agent signees, but I really think that they need to shore up their defense. So my question is, if you have a centerman and a defenseman available, which one would you pick? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Bob. Appreciate it. Here's how I view this, Joe. I think Matthew Schaefer, who is the defenseman, is the best player in the draft, and I think he is going to be immediately a player in the NHL, and I think he is going to be eventually a very, very good, probably Norris Trophy caliber defenseman in the NHL. That's how I view him, okay? You know, we've had Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com on the show, who studies these prospects all year round. And, look, Kimmelman's not the only one. I realize it's a lofty comparison, and sometimes people get carried away with this, but he's basically compared his skating to Cale Makar. So do with that what you will. Here's how I view it. I think because of how difficult it is to find a centerman, an impactful young centerman, that if the choice is there for the Predators to take a Hagans or a Misa, I think you got to do it. Like I think you've got to find a way to get one of those type of guys in your organization. And look, Misa is not McDavid, and Hagans isn't McDavid, but they're pretty good. Like Misa's been granted exceptional status in juniors. Like he's a pretty good prospect. So I think you've got to get one of those guys. If it ends up where the defenseman is the one that's available for you, then I take him. Like I would take Misa or Hagans would probably be my first two, and then Schaefer. I'm not going beyond those two and not taking Schaefer would be how I would view it. Now Trotz may not view it that way. Trotz may say, "Yeah, Schaefer's going to be pretty darn good. We're taking him." But I would go one of the two centermen.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Now you know it's just like. When we talk about the NFL draft, you know, beyond need, who's the best player? You have a chance to take the best player. If you truly believe, like, I know this guy's going to be great. Like you said, he skates like Makar. He's going to be a
Schaefer is the best player.
Perennial Norris guy. Like and you're like, these centermen are both, they can both be very good. But I know this is a great player. I mean, that you know, then that's the case to do it. It's just like, it's just. They've just never had a chance to get one of these guys here ever.
Right.
And I not that the entire history of the franchise should necessarily come into play in a decision like this, but that has been the biggest issue, blind spot, failure for this franchise.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity to actually address it.
Well, I think it's easier to find a defenseman than it is – a top line centerman. Not that it's easy to find like high level defensemen because it's not.
Right.
But they have done that throughout the history of their organization. I just think it's easier to find those guys than it is a centerman. I mean, look, the one other time that they've been in this situation in somewhat recent memory was back in 2013, and the way the draft fell, they were fourth, and there were three forwards that went right before them and a defenseman. Now they took Seth Jones. It was a good pick. Seth Jones has had a good career, but like, go look at the first two picks in that draft. It's Nathan MacKinnon and Alex Barkov. Those guys a little bit more impactful than what Seth Jones has done.
That's what you're looking for.
That's what you're looking for. And by the way, I don't know that either one of these centermen are those guys. So keep that in mind too.
If either of them was that level, or even not quite that level,
then we wouldn't
even run
to the
podium.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. Now. Some of the comparisons I've gotten for like a Hagans, if he reaches his top level, could he be Jack Hughes? Well, yeah, I'd take that.
Okay.
Like, I would take that. Misa, like a lot of people have compared him to, if he hits like the absolute max, could he be a John Tavares? I'd take that too. Now you're talking about like they're basically maxing out doing that, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with those two guys. But what if it ends up being somebody a notch or two below that? Is that going to be good enough at the end?
Well, especially if Schaefer turns out to be that guy.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of what you've got to wrestle with there. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Danny to the program. Danny, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, good morning. So I had a thought. So I really haven't seen this happen with the NHL. But if you're really not sold on this guy, you think you can get value. What's the odds of trading back to two or three and taking your center and picking up more draft capital if you are in that first-round pick?
Oh, yeah, thank you for the call. I would say
they got draft capital.
Number one, they have draft capital. And number two, you just don't see that in the NHL. Like, Barry Trotz has made no secret about it. He has been trying like mad the last 2 years to move into the top five with the draft capital he's got, and nobody will do it. Like, I don't think – like, I think, like, let's say you're number one and you want one of the centermen and San Jose's picking two, and you're feeling pretty strong about San Jose taking a defenseman, which I think they will. Well, why would San Jose want to trade up? They'll just be like, well, you just take your centerman, we'll take a defenseman. And if not, we'll take another centerman and we'll go three deep with Celebrini, Will Smith, and this other centerman we've got. Like, I don't think you're going to create a situation where like a San Jose or Chicago is going to move draft capital and move up. Like, it just doesn't really happen that much in the NHL.
Yeah. So you just hope that your team, you know, gets into that top three.
Yeah, get into the top three, and I think regardless of the way it plays out, you're going to have a really good player to build around. Hey, look, I say that, like, you're going to be in the top five. You're going to have, like, whoever they draft is probably going to be their top prospect, regardless of where it is in the top five. But I think you really want a centerman to build around. And then that gets into it. Let's say they get that guy, whether it's Misa. I like Misa the best. That would be who I would take. I like Misa. I think he's going to be a really, really good player in the NHL. So let's say they get him and they feel like he's ready to play next year. Well, with him next year, who I think you would have to temper expectations for, like Misa is not Sidney Crosby. He's not going to come in and put up 100 points. But could he be an everyday NHL player for you that while he's growing, you're like protecting him a little bit around you and you can do enough this offseason where you can get back to being in contention next year? Like, that's where I think they are. Whatever, like, this draft, whoever they end up in the draft with, beyond that, like, can you, with that player potentially on the roster, continue to build and get in a spot next year where you're competing for playoffs? And that's what I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that question right now.
David asking if you think they'll use all three firsts or
I do not
move.
I think it would make a lot of sense. They're going to use their first pick. So there's no way they're moving out of
the primo pick.
Their top pick. But those other two, like, they've got Vegas's other first round pick and they've got Tampa's. And we'll see where those two teams end up, but it's going to be a late first round pick wherever they are. I would not be surprised if they used one or both of those to try to manufacture a trade and go land somebody. Like, I think you've reached the point where you've probably got to do that if you're Barry Trotz.
Yeah.
So we'll see if there's any takers that way, but if I had to sit here today and guess, no, they're not using all three of those picks. Yeah.
They have to be competitive next year.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You've certainly got to be – like, the playoffs, it would be a darn shame to go out and spend the money you've spent this offseason and the first 2 years miss the playoffs like that. And, look, it may happen. And right now they seem like they're a long way away from that. Let's head back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Ryan to the program. Ryan, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Morning, guys. I'd say the smart thing would be to call a team like Pittsburgh with your other draft picks, with your all this draft capital, and to see if they'd be willing to trade their first-round pick for your two first-round picks and some other stuff because they're high in the top 10. And not only either get Schaefer or Haggins or Misa, but also look at another center named Roger McQueen. He is 6'5", 200, at least 200 pounds already. He's in the WHL. And NHL scouts have projected him to be a number one center on any NHL team in this league. Not saying he's going to be like the flashy Connor McDavid, but they're saying like, he could be like a Johansson or a Mikael Granlund where he's going to make the play. He may not show up on stat sheet, but he's that number one center that will make the play happen before the goal is done.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Ryan. There's on McQueen, there's a lot of different thoughts on him. And Elliot Friedman's talked about this too, of like some people think he can project to be a really top-level player and others are not quite sold on him. And I prefer – the guys that people are pretty sold on.
Yeah, Texter's saying he seems to have a super high ceiling and also a really low floor.
Yeah,
yeah, those are the ones you're like, I mean, hitting on those are great.
Hitting on those are great.
But if there's a big chance of a miss, you know. But, yeah, I mean, who knows how it'll shake out, right, with trades and where they'll end up and, you know, where he'll go. I mean, it's a possibility.
Well, and again, you know, I mentioned those three guys. There's a fourth one named Porter Martone who's a winger, who is going to be, I think, a really good player. Now, I think people get less excited when you start throwing out the word winger. But, like, I think he's going to be a good player. He's probably, if I had to guess, he's probably the one that's going fourth. So you're going to end up with a good player. It just depends, like, where is it going to be? And for my money, I'm trying to fix center as quickly as I can to find the Predators. That's just the way I would handle it. We'll get to more of your thoughts on the Predators. Also, want to pick up on a basketball story that we had yesterday, get Rex Rhodes' thoughts on that coming up as well. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025. We will loop Rex Road into the screaming about Baker Mayfield that we did yesterday in the 7 o'clock
hour. All right. I love screaming about Baker Mayfield.
Kuharsky will be with us in later in the show, I think around 7:30. But we'll see when Kuharsky shows up. Back-to-back days of Kuharsky are on the program. So
it's a lot of Kuharsky. A
lot of PK on the program.
You're welcome, Nashville.
So we'll get into, obviously, the coaching part of this at some point next week. Because, I mean, a week from today, the regular season ends for the Predators, and then that's going to be number one topic on people's mind is, all right, when the next day comes around, is Andrew Brunette going to be the coach? Is he not going to be the coach? When will Barry Trotz make that decision, or will he push it off? Like, I don't know. So we'll get into the Brunette part of this next week, because, I mean, quite frankly, the conversation hasn't changed on it since the last time we talked about it, and we're getting close to being decision time anyway. So we'll see what happens on that front. Here's my 30,000-foot view of trying to answer the question that I've thrown out there of, can they be competitive next year? You know, on one hand, Joe, you look at it, and Bob from Antioch, who called in earlier, is exactly right. They're a mess right now on defense. Now, when Yossi gets healthy and he's back next year, what level is he? Like, Yossi had a big drop-off this year from what he was a year ago, not unlike everybody else on the rest of the team for the most part. Like, does Yossi, is he back to being an elite defenseman at age 35? Is he going to end up just being like a pretty good defenseman and you have to compensate for that? I do think Brady Shea has gotten significantly better over the second half of the season, which is good to see. Jeremy Lazan has basically missed the whole year. I mean, he has been out since, I think, like mid-December. So it's been a lost season for Lazan. So there's three guys right there. And then you're going to have to figure out what the rest of your defense looks like. I think Trotz is pretty happy with what he's seen from Justin Barron. He's already said that he's probably going to go out and go get a veteran right-handed shot defenseman. So there's another one. That's five right there. And that's not even factoring in Adam Willsby, Spencer Stastny, Mark Delgado, and guys that could factor in next year, and Tanner Mulendike, who could be in camp. So they got to sort through their defensemen and see which way they're going to go there. I'm looking at their draft capital, Joe. I think they got to make a significant trade this summer at forward. Like, they need somebody to come in there and jumpstart their forward group, preferably at center. I realize that's a hard thing to do in a trade, is to bring in a centerman and do that. But they need somebody. I think a big part of whether or not they're going to be competitive next year is, can they have another driver of play? I would say right now they got one driver at forward, and that's Forsberg. And he's been good this year. He's not been great. Now, I say he's not been great. He's put up 70-something points. So it's a good year for Forsberg. He's the one driver of play I think they've got at forward. They need another one. I don't think Stamkos is that, but I think if you put Stamkos with the right guy, he could be a pretty good finisher. I mean, he's had a rough year, and he's still going to end up with 30. Like, he scored two last night. I think he's, what's he at now, 27, 28, somewhere there? Like, he's going to end up probably around 30. So, I mean, I think you can find, if you could get one more piece to come in, preferably at center, and downshift O'Reilly, and then maybe you get the draft pick playing on the third line somewhere in that role, then I think you could have a squad next year. And then it gets into, all right, well, is Saros going to play well? Can you defend? All those things. But that's what I think it's going to take, is to – they need somebody to come in and really jumpstart them on offense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like you said, it's very difficult to pry a legit centerman from someone, you know, in this league. You know, the Preds are maybe on the extreme end of, you know, being barren at the position in their history, but, you know, around the league, it's the highest demand, it's the most important, it's the hardest to, you know, to get someone to part with.
It is, and, you know, the natural question then becomes, all right, well, who's that? Who's available? And it's probably going to – if you're going to make a move like that, my guess is it's probably going to have to be a guy, and I'm just using this guy as an example, not necessarily the target of who it would be, but a guy of the ilk of like an Elias Pettersson, who has been a really good player in the NHL and recently has fallen off and has kind of fallen out of favor with his team. Like, that's what it takes in today's NHL to, like, move those guys.
Which, by the way, the one move they've made, which has led to the one Stanley Cup final they've made, was a guy who had kind of fallen out of favor but had talent and had a really good run here and probably doesn't get as much credit as he should get.
Exactly.
What he did here.
And Ryan Johansson. So, can you find something like that? Like, a lot of people keep texting me about, like, Tage Thompson from Buffalo, and I just don't know why they'd move him. I mean, I understand it's Buffalo, and they can,
they might do all kinds of stuff.
There's all kinds of stuff that they might do. But
14 years.
I mean, Tage Thompson he's going to score probably in the neighborhood about 47 goals this year. He's 27, and he scored 47 a couple years ago, like 94 points. Like, I would not move him
if
I'm Buffalo.
Why are they going to do that?
So,
by the way, the 14 straight non-playoff seasons, is that a record?
I don't know if it's
a
record or not,
holy
but that's
cow.
I mean, in a salary cap league,
that's incredible.
That's hard to do. Like, it's, you almost have to try to not make the playoffs 14 years in a row. And that's what the Sabres have done here.
And there's been a lot of teams in that stretch. Maybe, I don't know about a lot. Some teams in that stretch that actually had some expectations too, by the way.
Well, including this year.
Yeah.
Like, this
was supposed to be your, okay,
look at
now,
that roster. They should be better than they are.
They've got some
now,
dudes.
Their goalies have sucked for a long time, but like, they should be better than they are. So that goes to show you that sometimes when you get in the rut, it's hard to get out. Like, you got to make some good decisions to get out. So we'll see if the Predators can do that. We will pick up this conversation, obviously, throughout the week next week as the season is coming to an end and we get on Andrew Burnett watch as to whether or not he's going to be back as head coach. But big decisions coming right around the corner for the Predators as their regular season is coming to an end. An interesting piece that we discussed yesterday with PK on the NBA front, which got a lot of reaction from you guys. Want to get Joe's thoughts on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We'll get into the Titans and the NFL draft coming up here to begin the 7 o'clock hour. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com will be with us later in the show. A lot of participation on the Preds front. Appreciate that. We will definitely get back into that over the course of the next week here as the Predators wrap up their regular season. So, Joe, there was a piece that came out at The Ringer on the NBA that Kuharsky made me aware of that we talked about a little bit yesterday. And basically, it goes through the evolution of the three-point shot. It brings up a game between Oklahoma City and Boston where there were more three-pointers missed in a game than actual field goals made. And we talked about this a lot yesterday, and here's basically what my stance on it was. I don't really love what this has turned into in the NBA, which is basically, if you look at some of the heat maps in this article here, it's basically, all right, find a three-point shot somewhere around the arc, and if you don't find that, get right underneath the basket. But anything other than that, we don't want it. And as I said yesterday, I don't blame the NBA teams for that necessarily, because they have analytics departments, and that's what they're telling them to do. So that's what it is, and that's what it's turned into. I do think from a viewership standpoint, that can be a problem. Like, it's, everybody loves watching Steph Curry and him, you know, being able to shoot and pull up from anywhere. Problem is, not everybody's Steph Curry, and now people are chucking threes left and right and just walking back up and down the floor and chucking threes. So, you know, this brought out a lot of reaction yesterday, and we got into the load management discussion. We got into a whole bunch of things in the NBA, then messing with the All-Star game and trying whatever in the heck they tried this last time out. Like, I think there are a lot of things in the NBA that they've got to try to fix that rank ahead of the three-point shot right now. But I do wonder, like, from a viewership standpoint, how does the NBA viewer kind of view what's going on right now, which is basically, as Kurt Goldsberry points out here, you're either chucking up a three or you're getting right underneath the basket, and that's what offense is in the NBA right now. And then let's get your thoughts on that first, and then we'll get to the solution that he's thrown out there, which is basically eliminating the corner three, which I'll get your thoughts on here.
Yeah, no, I read the piece during here. I just actually finished it. It's a really interesting piece. And, yeah, look, first of all, I get it. I do think sometimes it just gets a little bit tiresome, you know, just launch after launch. And, you know, the numbers here are a little bit alarming. But that is – I mean, that look, the people like Nate Oates at Alabama and of course, you know, in the NBA is, of course, ahead of the curve. But the college teams that really get into this stuff, there's a lot of – in a lot of cases, it's influence from the NBA analytics people, right?
Yeah.
And it's just as simple as these mid-range jump shots, just the math says that it's just not efficient. So, I mean, again, Nate Oates tells his team, like, we shoot threes, we shoot layups. We don't shoot other things. Now, every once in a while, an Alabama player will be like – defended so well, they'll have to take a mid-range and they'll hit it. I'm like, I know he hits a shot. You got to bench him, Nate. Bench him. He shot a mid-range.
That's right.
And I love the midi. I love mid-range, and I like, you know, I'd like it to be more balanced across the board. But this is what the math says. So, and I do think also that, like, Steph Curry, who probably is as fun a player as there's ever been to watch in the league. I mean, he's up there. I mean, I know people would say he's not as fun as Jordan, but, I mean, when Steph Curry – goes nuclear in a game, and he's
very entertaining.
It's incredible, and of course he uses that as a weapon to get to the rim too, and you know, make a lot of plays in different ways. I do think that as great as he is, I think that's maybe impacted things negatively a little bit because everybody wants to be him, right? So, I understand the concern. It does get a little bit. I mean, there are teams that play differently, but, like, Boston is the big example because they are extreme. Like, Joe Mazzulla has said it. He's a math guy, and it's all about the three for them, and so they have these games where it's just nothing but launch threes. And they have enough shooters that it makes sense with their personnel, but it can get tiresome. So I get it. I don't – and the solution is an interesting thought.
So the solution idea that's been thrown out there, again, in this piece at The Ringer – is basically to eliminate the three-point line at the corner three. It's to cut off the three-point arc basically at the top, and that the corner three, which is the most popular three-point shot in the league, would no longer be a thing, and you'd be reducing the number of threes that were taken that way and forcing some of these quote-unquote corner three-point specialists to play differently and to have different roles in the offense. I know some people will look at that and immediately dismiss it out of hand. That was kind of my initial reaction too, of like, I don't really love the idea of messing with the court in the NBA. But like, I also recognize that you may have to do something at some point to just cut down on all these threes. Like, it was interesting, like LeBron was on his podcast with Steve Nash, and he talked about how things go in cycles in the NBA, and how when he started, it was everybody had two bigs, and that's how you ran your offense. And then Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire, it turned into that with one big, and that's what they copied in Miami and made Chris Bosh a five and played a little bit more small ball. And now it's gone even beyond that, where it's basically five out is what he said. It's five out, everybody can shoot threes, and the big man is just, other than Jokic, basically eliminated in the NBA. So is it ever going to cycle back? I don't know, but right now, I mean, it's just a three-point league. It's what it is.
You know, the funny thing about that is it actually has, in college basketball, cycled back to two bigs a lot more. It's really interesting. I mean, if you look at the teams you just played for national championship. I mean, Florida has four legit bigs, and they play two bigs. Now, one of them, Haug, is a three-point shooting four, but he's still, like, he's more of a true, you know, big guy. And then Houston essentially goes with two big. The college game has kind of gone because, you know, another thing about shooting threes, and you get into the math, if you look at success in basketball, the teams that offensive rebound at a high level are some of the best teams consistently. And these two teams just play for national championship. One of them, I think, is number one in the country. One of them, I think, 10 in offensive rebounding rate. So, but in the NBA, you're right. Like, how many, like, just straight up guys who you can throw the ball into or want to play. I mean, your guy in Miami, Bam, kind of plays like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, like.
But even he's not.
He's not your traditional
big.
Right. Yeah. He's not a, like a center. And that's why it's like sometimes you know, for example, let's take a guy, and I know he's not like a star. He probably won't be a star, but he has been a really good addition. Zach Edey with Memphis. Yep. It's like, it is kind of good to be able to throw the ball, and then you can't stop him. He's going to just lay it in for you, right? But so I do think there's some truth to the cyclical nature. I don't know, man. I mean, this is my first time hearing about the corner three. I generally don't like the idea. I think the point made in the piece is a good one, which is, you know, this – I mean, I don't remember the NBA without the three-point shot. But it was 1979, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson come in the league, the three-point shot comes in the league. I'm sure a lot of people at the time were like, this is such a weird gimmick. What are you doing? You know? Now, the ABA had already had it, so they'd kind of seen it and how it looked. But it has been 46 years since you did that, and you haven't changed it at all. And look at – you have the best players in the world, the best skill in the world. I mean, Sean's here on the text, and I'm like, I thought the NBA was the best it's ever been. It's a joke. Well, it is the best it's ever been in terms of the talent level. It's not even close. That's, but things get better. Things get bigger. People get bigger, stronger, faster, more skilled in every sport. They're all better now than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whether you like it or not, Sean. Anyway, but I understand the complaints, and I don't know, man. Like, I think of Bruce Bowen. Who I just hated that guy.
Yeah.
Probably because he denied my Pistons a championship by guarding Chauncey Billups in the fourth quarter of Game 7 in 2005. But all that guy did, he did on offense, that's all he did. You stand in the corner. He couldn't dribble, couldn't drive, couldn't do anything, but he could stand in the corner and he could hit those
shoot
short three-point shots.
Play defense.
So if you got rid of that guy, I guess I'm kind of in favor of that.
Let's head back. Screw you, Bruce Bowen.
Yeah.
Let's head back to our 102.5 game phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in David to the program. David, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I've gotten to the point where I only watch the NBA during the playoffs because it seems like that's the only time I see basketball. And where I think there's very little hope, in my opinion, was exactly what you talked about with the NCAA championship game. It was all coast-to-coast basketball by two teams that really had a ton of talent, and I didn't see a typical game plan or the talent exhibited there. It was honestly pretty boring to me. I ended up not watching the game, but I'd like to see them bring some basketball back to the NBA, especially since these are some of our best players in the country. And that's just my quick comment. Thank you all. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Here's what I wonder, Joe. Is there going to be a team along the way here that is able to go back to like a – maybe not even a two-man big setup, but can play some big matchups where teams are forced to defend them and they're successful with it. Then you get into trouble about, like, how do you defend the other team when they go into small ball. But, like, is there a team here in the next few years that becomes so good with their size that teams just can't handle it with the way the NBA is going? I don't know. It hadn't happened yet. We'll see if it happens at some point.
The Pistons are a little bit of a throwback team like that with some of the bigs they have. But, yeah, I mean, like, you know, if Shaquille O'Neal, who, again, is a – I mean, there's really never been anybody quite like him still.
Yeah.
But if you had a 7'2", 330-pound guy who doesn't really have shooting skill, but, like, you cannot stop running. If that guy came in the league, I think a team would use him that way, right?
I think.
And then, yes –
then he's got to go defend Jokic at three-point
line. Sure, exactly. You have challenges on the other end, but that's the thing. The thing is in basketball, even the tall kids now, they all want to shoot threes.
Right.
You know? But I think there's a lot of value. Like I just said, Zach Edey is a guy who, I mean, there's some value in saying just throw it to him, and they better double him or he's going to score. So we just need more guys like that, or Wemby to, like, put 80 pounds on. Put 80 pounds on, Wemby.
Got one text that says, we should treat it like church league softball. After five homers, every homer's an out. After 10 threes, it's a turnover. You get 10 threes. That's it.
There we go.
That's good.
We've got the answer.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll get into the Titans and the NFL draft conversation coming up next. Lots of yelling yesterday on the text line about the Baker Mayfield example we threw out there. We'll get Joe's thoughts on that coming up next. And one thing that Stilly said yesterday that I just found to be insane. We'll get into that next hour as well. Robbie and Rex Robe, 102.5, 106.3, the game.